And welcome to the Tuesday, April 17th, 2012 Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. This is a regular business meeting for us, and so the first item on our agenda is requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. This is for people who want to speak to us about items that are not already on our printed agenda. I have James Wilson signed up to speak about a police item. Is that right? Okay. Well, that sounds like an item not on our printed agenda. So why don't you come on up to the podium, if you would, and address the board.
Hi, everyone. I'm James Wilson. I'm a member of the Carrboro Commune. I want to bring to your attention several events which have occurred in the past few weeks regarding the Carrboro Police Department. Nearly a month ago, I was stopped in Charles Wilson Park by a Carrboro Police Department officer. After ordering me to stay on the path to avoid eroding the park, he appeared to remember me from several Carrboro commune actions in the past weeks, during which I observed and recorded police activity. He asked me for my identification, which I declined to give him. The officer then gave me an extended monologue during which he cautioned me against involving myself with the Carrboro Commune, claiming it was a, and I quote, a dangerous anarchist group. They were sure to do, and I quote, something serious soon. He told me that if I continued to participate in this type of activity, it would, and I quote, end badly for me. Towards the end of the speech, he took on a more threatening physical posture and informed me that the police would, quote, unquote, come down hard and come down fast if the group continued to act in what he considered a dangerous and lawless fashion. He then let me go. In addition, 2 weeks ago, I was observing a homeless man I knew being interrogated by Carrboro police on Main Street. I sat on a bench across the street and watched, noting down the three-digit numbers displayed on the police vehicles parked nearby. I noticed one unmarked car, which whose license plate I could not see from my position. The officers eventually left without serious incident, at which point I stood up and walked to Weaver Street Market. After making my purchase at said market, I cut back to Main Street through the back parking lot of the police station, where I noticed the same unmarked car being parked. As the officer parking the car entered the station, I noted down the license plate for computer reference, at which point I was stopped by another officer, a plainclothes officer. He questioned me as to why I was writing down tags and car numbers. After making little progress in this line of questioning, he called two other officers to the scene and asked me for my identification, which I declined to give, North Carolina not being a stop and identify state. He insisted, and when I refused, he ordered me to place my hands on the car and submit to a search. I did so. After the officer obtained my identification, he demanded to know my current address, which I gave. He entered my ID and current address into some type of form, gave me my ID, and allowed me to leave. License plates, especially police plates, are a matter of public record. I don't believe this officer had the right to subject me to this, what I consider, intimidating and invasive behavior. Thank you.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James.
Jackie?
I was just going to say, he left, that I'd like to refer that to the police department for a response.
Sure.
To hear both sides of the story.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right, is there a second for that one?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed.
Could I just add one thing? And to take this into context, because we received a similar complaint about asking for identification previously, so I would hope that both of those could be addressed by the police department. According to these two reports, it seems like it's happened more than once.
Yeah. And David, I don't want to place too much weight on, you know, any particular report, but, you know, I would be concerned if there was any foundation to the notion of profiling people based on their political associations or attempting to intimidate citizens based on that. And I do believe it's okay for citizens to observe police activities as long as they're not interfering with them, and that's not sufficient grounds for the police detaining that person as it's reported. And I'm not saying there's not. I agree with Jackie that there's certainly another side to that story that we should hear. But
Carolyn's out all this week, but certainly we'll give you a full report when she gets back. I was familiar with one of the incidents in the parking lot over at the police department where someone was looking in the windows of the cars, and it did concern the police officers. I didn't know, you know, who they spoke with at the time, but we'll give you a full report on everything.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. That brings us to our proclamations. We have two proclamations tonight. Is there someone from KidScope who's here? Come up and come on up here.
Whereas Child Care Services Association, the Orange County Partnership for Young Children, KidScope, the Orange County Preschool Interagency Council, and the Durham Orange Association for the Education of Young Children are celebrating the Week of the Young Child under the national theme of Early Years Are Learning Years. And whereas the organizations are working to improve early learning opportunities, which are crucial to the growth and development of young children and to building better futures for everyone. And whereas making sure children are ready to learn is a community endeavor that involves parents, child care providers, policymakers, businesses, congregations, and communities, community agencies. And whereas early care and education is a viable economic development strategy that nurtures the beginning of the talent pipeline workforce based on research that confirms that children with early learning success are more likely to finish school, more likely to attend college, and more likely to be employed. And whereas high-quality early care is critical for the towns of Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Hillsborough, and the County of Orange's future success in support of the current workforce of a majority of families with young children who rely on child care to work, to reduce employee absenteeism and turnover, and to support the school readiness of our youngest children. And whereas, in order to support the stability and success of families, comprehensive, bilingual, evidence-based family support, health, early intervention, and literacy services are offered to young children and their families. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, the mayor of the town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim the week of April 22nd through 28th, 2012, as the Week of the Young Child, and acknowledge that early years are learning years, and the ages of birth through five are the most critical time in children's development, which builds the foundation for later success in school and life. So, I
appreciate that.
All right, great. I want to thank you very much for your support. We really appreciate it.
All right, good one.
Thank you.
All right. And then, as long as I'm here, is Jeff here?
Come on up.
So, I'll try to get through this faster, sorry. This is just a proclamation designating May 2012 as Bike Month and May 9th specifically as Walk and Bike to School Day, and the week of May 16th through 20th as Bike to Work Week. Whereas the League of American Bicyclists is promoting May 2012 as National Bike Month and the week of May 14th through 18th as Bike to Work Week, and the National Center for Safe Routes to School and the League of American Bicyclists are promoting May 9th as National Bike to School Day. And whereas the Carrboro Comprehensive Bicycle Transportation Plan recommends promoting these events, and the town has been named a silver-level bicycle-friendly community by the League of American Bicyclists. And whereas promoting bicycling as a mode of transportation helps the town of Carrboro progress toward greenhouse gas reduction goals. And whereas the League of American Bicyclists, when a short trip is made by, according to them, when a short trip is made by bicycle instead of a single occupancy vehicle, it prevents 3.6 pounds of pollutant per mile from being emitted into the atmosphere. And whereas a lack of physical activity plays a leading role in rising rates of obesity, diabetes, and other health problems among children and adults, and bicycling is a fitness activity that may lower these health risks, now therefore be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, the mayor of the town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim that May 2012 is designated as Bike Month
May 9th is designated as Walk and Bike to School Day, and May 14th through 18th is designated as Bike to Work Week. And so I'll give that to you, Jeff Brubaker, who's our transportation planner for the town of Carver. I don't know if you want to add anything. Sure. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Mayor and Board of Aldermen. As the town does every year, there is a number of events that I will go through very quickly that the town, working with Town of Chapel Hill, local businesses, and nonprofits, put on to promote Bike Month and to celebrate bicycling as an efficient and healthy mode of transportation. So, May has been recognized as National Bike Month since 1956. It's usually done in conjunction in the Triangle with the Smart Commute Challenge. The Smart Commute Challenge challenges employees across the region to take alternative transportation to work. That's usually in the spring. It'll be in the fall this year, so stay tuned. And these are the dates as the proclamation stated. And we always do a quick recap of the events we did last year. We did a bike on bus demonstration during Strawberry Day at the farmers market last year. We had Dave Deming, who is, of course, a Chapel Hill Transit bus driver and avid cyclist, teaching kids and adults how to load their bike on the front of the bus and thus increase their range using alternative transportation. We had a bike breakfast. There were about 100 attendees, including several aldermen who came. And there was free food, raffle prizes, and tune-ups. And it was held across from Armadillo Grill, right by the Libocotton Bikeway, so it was good exposure to folks who are commuting by bike. And it got some press, too. It was covered by WCHL. There was a really good attendance. So, and then finally, there was a Chapel Hill Carborough bike ride where the two towns worked together to have a leisurely cruiser ride for all ages through town. And it starts and ends with celebration, food, and music at Wallace Parking Deck in Chapel Hill. So this year, we got a head start on Bike Month by having a critical mass ride, which happened yesterday. This was organized by the Recreation and Parks Department, so recognize Anita and Julie, and they could answer more questions about this event. But if I get these numbers right, there were 87 attendees, including 40 kids. So, and Curious George was there, too. So we got let me just also state that Critical Mass Ride, it's the second one the town has done, working with the Recyclery and Spoken Revolutions and the Carborough Bicycling Coalition. And it really teaches kids how to ride on the road, but in a safe and kind of controlled setting. So we also acknowledge that the police department provided to officers to help out with the ride as well. The Rec and Parks Department also has two courses, Introduction to Bicycle Safety and Basic Bicycle Commuting. They are meeting starting in about a week. So if anybody's interested in signing up, they can go through Rec Connect or talk to Anita or Julie, and there are spots open still for both of those programs. Great. And then finally, I also wanted to acknowledge there's a bikeability workshop that's being put on by the town of Chapel Hill, which caters specifically to children with special needs and letting them know how to bike safely. So this year we also happen to do will be doing the events that we did last year. The bike on bus demonstration will be Cinco de Mayo. It'll be during the Strawberry Day once again. So come on out and look for the Chapel Hill Transit bus parked on Laurel right in front of Town Hall, and come by and try loading your bike on the bus. And then Tuesday, May 15th this year is the bike breakfast. Same location as last year, the municipal parking lot across from Armadillo Grill. And then the Bike Chapel Hill Carborough ride is now called the Spring Roll, and that will start in the Wallace parking deck as it did last year. So there will be a route stop at Town Commons as well. So with that, that's just a very brief preview of the events, and be glad to take any questions.
Thank you for doing this. I want to reiterate one of the announcements that you made, and that's the basic bicycle commuting class. That's a project of the Recreation and Parks Commission, Eric Allman in particular. And I think I would really love to encourage people to go to that, because it's going to teach you how to use your bike for commuting, how to use your bike to go grocery shopping, how to run errands, how to ride after dark, what to do in bad weather. So all those reasons that people may not use their bike, this is going to be like teaching folks how to do it. And the Rec and Parks Commission is real excited about it, and Eric's put a lot of work into it. So I encourage people to go.
Yeah, I want to also encourage folks to do the spring roll. That was pretty fun. I did that last year. My family and I did that last year. And it's a nice ride that kind of meanders through Chapel Hill and Carborough and goes back to Chapel Hill. It was a lot of fun. Jeff, I had a quick question. Do you know why the Smart Commute Challenge was moved to from the spring to the fall?
I don't know.
Thanks.
Yeah, and I'd just like to thank all the folks who have been involved in this, because I know a lot of the folks on the Transportation Advisory Board are involved and put a lot of effort into it, along with the Recyclery and the Bike Coalition. But I also would like to encourage folks to go to the bike breakfast, which is pretty fun and tasty.
And win a raffle prize.
Jeff, I wanted to thank you for all of your work, but I also want to thank all the citizens, because obviously there's several bike groups that have joined together, and that, I think, it really speaks volumes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. All right. I believe that brings us to our consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Mayor, members of the board, you have four items on your agenda. The first item is the minutes from the April 3rd and April 10th board meetings. The second item is an ordinance amending the membership of the Green Waste Commission. Item number three is to approve the audit contract for the town's financial audit for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2012. And the fourth item is a budget amendment to increase the general fund obligation bonds from $2,590,000 to $4.6 million to continue with the sidewalk and green waste projects.
Move the items.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Item D1, a public hearing, voluntary annexation of Claremont South Subdivision.
Mark, yes, may ma'am. I just ask if the item 6 looks like it's something that we might be able to knock out very quickly, either that or move it to another night, because 10:40 at night is probably not the time to discuss doing a subcommittee.
Why don't we see when we get there? And if we can't do it, we can move it rather than decide to move it now.
Why don't we get through the Claremont item and then see where we are, because that's what all these people have come to talk about.
Okay.
And, Mark, maybe before we get started, you could explain or ask staff to explain the distinction among the four items we have on Claremont so that people in the audience are just clear about how that.
Right. Okay. Mr. Manager?
Okay. Your first four items are related to the Claremont South Subdivision, and Town Attorney Mike Bro will explain how the four items are intertwined. Mike?
They have to be taken in sequence. I mean, there's a certain order that you have to do all these, but we have this. There's a precedent for doing it this way. Let me start with the annexation. That's the first thing that has to be decided, because the property is currently in the county, and could not be rezoned without the county's consent unless it comes into the municipality, unless it comes into Carborough first. So the first action item would have to be the annexation that brings it into the town's jurisdiction. The next item is the rezoning, which deals with the question of whether or not to rezone it to the PUD zoning district. There's no real site. It's not like conditional zoning where you have a site plan attached to it. There's no site plan attached to that. That's just rezoning it that would allow them to increase the density. Basically, that's and allow the mixture of uses with the commercial use. So that's the second item that has to be done. And it has to be done in that order. And the third item is the conditional use permit, which is the actual permit that describes the specific elements of the design of the project. And the fourth item is something that you would get to after you do the other first three. Now, the applicant has indicated that if you were to ultimately conclude that you did not wish to rezone and issue the conditional use permit, that he would withdraw the annexation petition. So what we've done in the past with this kind of a situation where the petition is contingent upon your decision with respect to zoning matters is, and the procedure that I would suggest that you follow this evening is to hold each of the public hearings successively, but not take action on them until you held the three public hearings. Then you can have a discussion to decide kind of which way you're inclined to go, and if your inclination is to approve the rezoning and the permit, then you would start and go back and vote first on the annexation, then the rezoning, then the conditional use permit. If your inclination after all the discussion is that you were to not be in favor of rezoning and issuing the permit, then you could just so indicate, and I expect at that point they would withdraw their application or their petition for the annexation, and you wouldn't have to vote, and there would be no vote for you to take because you couldn't take the successive votes unless the property is bought within into the town's jurisdiction. So, again, the first item that you have to take is the annexation, and that's just a question of whether the property is going to be brought into the town of Carver or not. The second question is the rezoning, which has no site plan attached to it. And the third one, is when you get into the specifics of the project, is the conditional use permit. I was informed that a number of the people who are here are interested in the connection or no connection of the street with the adjoining subdivision. That matter would be appropriately addressed in the third public hearing because that's the place to address it because that's the point at which you would be deciding whether or not there is to be a connection made, which is not proposed by the applicant. That issue arises in the third public hearing, not the first two.
Okay.
And the fourth?
And the fourth matter is if you were to issue if you were to annex, rezone, and issue the permit, that would then require a sort of pro forma amendment of the existing. There's an existing conditional use permit that covers the property that we're talking about, the Claremont mm-hmm. South, and that has a whole series of conditions which would become irrelevant if you take the affirmative action on the first three. So you don't get to the fourth one unless you get the first three. If you decide that you're not going to go with the first three and they withdraw the annexation, you don't have to deal with the fourth one either. So, you know.
Mike, I have a question.
Okay.
To what extent are we allowed to consider our memory of our public hearing we had 3 years ago, which dealt with a lot of these same issues?
I think all of that will enter into your decision on whether or not to annex and rezone. I mean, I think it's all relevant. But, I mean, in terms of the actual the issuance of the permit, if you think there are matters, if you get to the permit stage and it's specific aspects of the permit, I think by bringing that to the attention of everyone in the context of the public hearing, that would be satisfactory.
Okay. Jackie,
Dan.
Yeah, Mark, I just want to let it be known that I told a bunch of citizens that, as specified in the staff report, the connector road is a settled matter, you know, that's continuous from the existing permit. And I've been telling folks they didn't need to come out to speak to that. So if for some reason the board decides to reopen that, which I assume we won't since five of us who voted for the previous plan still sit here, but if we did, you know, I would want to continue the public hearing and, you know, because there were something like 75 neighbors who we heard from 3 years ago on that,
yeah.
And we'd have to give them the opportunity to all come out again if we do that and to understand that this is back on the table. So obviously we get to that with the third item, but I just want to lay out that context.
Right. Yes.
I know that the connector is the most contentious part of this. I also know that the developer hasn't requested it, and that I don't see. I agree with Dan, unless I'll be surprised. I'm presuming that the only reason that the connector road is even an issue is because it's still part of an overall connector road plan, and one of the advisory boards was in favor of it. Is that why it's even under consideration this evening?
Well, it's not under consideration.
I thought technically it was under consideration.
Not according to the staff report.
I think it was brought to your attention because of the planning board It was just brought to you in the sense of saying the planning board said this.
Oh, so we really are not officially considering a connector road this evening.
Yeah, Jackie, if you look at page 3 of the staff report on the bottom is where it specifies that the application is consistent with the previous approval.
Right. Well, but then I saw that there was all this action around it, but we're really not considering a connector
that's
road.
That's not on the table right now.
Which I think is important for people to... to understand,
Randy, and then Sammy.
I just want to clarify from the planning board that they were asked by staff to make a recommendation, and they stayed consistent with a recommendation that they had made a couple of years ago, they added, a couple of statements, but really they were staying consistent with where they were, so it wasn't that there's new findings.
So I thought I read somewhere that because this was a new application, we would have to reconsider the connector road.
That's what I heard. Well, you could reconsider it, is what I understand.
It is a new application, and I guess in a hyper-technical sense, it is an issue that's before you, but we have no expectation that it is going to have any different outcome that it had the last time. So, I would say, in a hyper-technical sense, it's something that you would conclude is it's not something that the applicant is proposing. So, if you approve the plan that has been proposed, you have considered and addressed that issue. And frankly, we're expecting that we would be surprised if there was a substantially different result than we had the last time.
So maybe that'll change the tenor of the meeting. Thank you. Yeah.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Dan.
Sammy, did that answer your question?
Yeah, that answered it. It's just one difference with this application is there's a business district, and one of the arguments for the planning board was that it would, to their viewing, make sense to have this connectivity.
Well, that was a point that they raised, but again, they didn't. They were asked by staff to make a recommendation. They weren't seeking to alter from the position that they held 3 years ago necessarily.
Well, if they made it doesn't make sense. If they made a recommendation, it would have been because they believed this would be an opportunity.
They were asked to make a recommendation. It wasn't that they were being proactive.
Right.
But this is a mute point because if five folks who are here who voted against it before are going to vote against it now, there's no reason to.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I do have the feeling we're talking about the part that's not going to happen. So,
yes.
I was just going to say, I think that they, I was in that meeting with the planning board, and I think it's more about us. From my understanding, not honoring the road connector policy, like a statement about the road connector policy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so they made a recommendation and included that to let us know that, not that we're going to change the decision now. I mean, I do think it's a moot point, but I think it's more about the statement.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right, and just very briefly to Sammy, I think where I'm coming from, too, is the way we based our decision a couple years ago was dependent on expansion of neighborhoods around this so that when this connector opened up, there were other connectors in place. And so that really hasn't happened yet, to in my view, to shift that position. So.
Okay. Does the staff have a presentation on this? Or
Trish, do you want to
talk
about it? Just briefly, we do have presentations on the rezoning
and the conditional use permit request for you. So the first item is a legislative action, and the second is a quasi-judicial public hearing, and there'll be a need for folks who want to testify, I mean, offer their comments to be sworn in with the clerk. So
you mean the second and third?
Well, I was just going to speak to the annexation question. And so what I'm saying, we have presentations for two of the items, which are the rezoning and the conditional use permit. Typically, if you have questions about the annexation, we can certainly address those, but don't have a presentation plan for that item.
Okay.
So we would move right into the rezoning if you would like us to begin.
Sure.
I just had one quick question. The utilities for that property, once we annex, we are required to provide utilities to a certain distance. Is that an issue, or where are the utilities? Oh, it's voluntary. It's different.
It is a different circumstance. Okay, there are utilities adjacent to this property, and they'll be extended in this part of the development.
Okay, thanks.
And sorry if I'm being dense, but why are we not voting on the annexation?
Because they want to not do it. If we don't,
you need to hold the public hearing, but postpone the decision, because if your ultimate conclusion is that you are not in favor of the rezoning and the issuance of the permit.
I know you laid all this out, and I'm sorry that I'm still confused. But so we're going to have all three public hearings?
Yes, successively.
And then?
And then vote on whichever of those three things are relevant.
In essence, would be a sort of a straw vote or a consensus vote of basically giving the applicant the indication as whether or not they wish to go forward with the annexation or not. This is a procedure we've used in the past.
Because if we don't rezone, then there's no sense in having an annex. If we annex it first and don't rezone it, puts the applicant in an awkward position.
Right, I understand that. But I just didn't quite get procedurally how we rezone without annexing, since we can't. But I'll go along with that.
Let's just jump in.
Yeah, so for the first item, it is a request, from the owners for voluntary annexation of the property. So there's slightly over 38 acres of property south of the existing Claremont development, and just north of the Carolina North property and the Wexford subdivision. So the dashed line represents the existing city limits boundary, which currently comes to the center line of Homestead Road in this location. And so the property with the dark solid line is the outline of the property under consideration this evening for a voluntary annexation, a rezoning to planned unit development, and conditional use permit. And there is currently a condition on the CUP that applies to the property here regarding annexation at such time as if that project were to go forward without what's before you this evening, at the time a final plat is approved, that prior to that, a voluntary annexation request would be submitted. So it's a timing matter for the most part as far as, you know, acting on this prior to the rezoning, but ultimately there has been a request or a condition agreed to for the property already. It was in relation to the CUP that was issued a couple of years ago. So I think we're ready to move into the rezoning.
You've got to hold a public hearing on the annexation.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. You have to see if anyone wants to offer comments.
This puts us, I have.
You want it.
I have I have 10 people signed up. A few people have put themselves down real specifically on Claremont rezoning. Others have just signed up, said they want to speak on Claremont. So I don't know exactly which public hearing they want to address us during.
Well, I don't either, but I can just again repeat that the annexation question is dealing solely with the issue of whether or not this property comes into the corporate jurisdiction of the town of Carborough.
Okay. Are there any of you who signed up to speak here on Claremont in some way wanting to speak on the annexation question, or does it more have to do with rezoning and other issues? Anybody want to speak on annexation? All right. We're going to come to a hearing in a few minutes on the rezoning, but so there's no one who wants to speak on the annexation.
Then you just close that public hearing.
Move the public hearing be closed.
Second. All right. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Okay. Now we're on to the rezoning question. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think...
Tina.
Tina.
Good evening, all. I'm Tina Moon. I'm here in the second portion, the rezoning portion of the Claremont South project tonight. And the purpose of this is to provide an opportunity for public input, which is part of the process for considering a rezoning application. You're already familiar with the site to a certain extent from Trisha's showing of the annexation map, but just as a little bit of a refresher, you can see Homestead Road. Homestead Road. This was our 1,000-foot area for notification purposes. This is the original Claremont subdivision, phases 1 through 3, and this is what had become phases 4 and 5. So this is the section that we're talking about tonight, is the proposed Claremont South. And again, the red shows the extent of the town limits. Oops. Just to give you a little bit of background, and some of you may remember this, the original application for the conditional use permit for Claremont, phases 1 through 3, which was just over 27 acres, came before you in 2005. The applicants then came for a major modification in 2009, and that included the southern two portions, which they described as phases 4 and 5, and that's an additional just over 38 acres. In 2010, the applicants came before you on a couple of occasions to just talk about the project in general, and mainly to discuss potential modifications, mainly things regarding the size and the type of dwelling units. I think the market had changed a little bit, and they were looking at ways to respond to that. And subsequently, the applicants decided that they were interested in pursuing a small commercial component within the project. And after reviewing the land use ordinance, it appeared that the best way to accomplish that was to look at the plan unit development district mechanism. Just as a refresher of what the plan unit district is, this is essentially it's a general rezoning district. It's listed as a use category 28 in our table of permitted uses. So it's a general rezoning. It's not a conditional. You can't attach conditions to the rezoning. The way this is unique is that it combines characteristics of two and potentially three different use categories. So there's a residential component, there's a commercial component, and then there's an option for a manufacturing component. And again, a plan unit development is subject to a conditional use permit, but that happens subsequently. Oops. Just to give you a little sense of the existing situation, I've tried to kind of highlight the zoning that's there in place now. And as you can see, about a third of the project is currently zoned R15, this section here, and the remaining portion is zoned R20. What the applicant has proposed for their plan unit development is a combination of R10 with B3. As you know, the R10 is a residential zoning district requiring 10,000 square feet per dwelling unit. And again, as part of a plan unit development, the standard natural constraints, density and so forth, as in a normal subdivision, would apply. The B3 is considered a neighborhood business zone, and it's designed to suit kind of a small-scale neighborhood community. The B3 portion of the PUD cannot exceed 10% of the entire district, so we're looking at a maximum of about 3.8 acres total. And there is and I say this clearly, you can have a residents in the B3 portion if you choose to. So that is an option. Did I skip one? Sorry. As part of the application for a plan unit development, you submit two parts. Really, there's the application with an accompanying narrative that supports how your rezoning is consistent with our adopted policies, and there's also an illustrative or a concept plan indicating how this would be laid out. And as you can see, all of the areas at this point are labeled as R10/B3. They've not specified where the different activities will occur. That's something that will come with the conditional use permit. Zooming in on some of this data down here, it gives you a sense of comparison of what the potential is. You know, there's the potential of rezoning to an R10 to have a higher density. There's also the potential for the business piece. For your considerations this evening, a rezoning is a legislative decision. There is a need to hold a public hearing, which is what we're doing right now. What is ultimately before the board is to consider whether this change advances the public health, safety, welfare, and so forth. And you're also asked to adopt a statement regarding the consistency of the action with our adopted plans.
All right.
Just real quick, just to go through real quick what staff has identified as potential or as the policies that seem to impact this project the most. It's mainly things in the Northern Study Area, part of the facilitated small area plan. And there's a couple of these. These are in your staff report. There also seems to be some link to the Vision 2020, both that the Vision 2020 supports the Northern Study Area Plan and also the balanced and controlled growth. Whenever there's a more intense density, there is that almost by the nature of a smaller lot, a smaller house size, so that it offers an opportunity for a more diverse balance of housing. This did go before the advisory boards at their joint meeting. The Planning Board, the Environmental Advisory Board, found the rezoning request consistent with the items that I just mentioned. The TAB also recommended approval. I think they felt that the 10% limit to the commercial was perhaps a little too small. And the Northern Transition Area, which we just got this afternoon, has recommended an approval until a new mixed-use zone is created, and that's at your place tonight. So I'm happy to answer questions, or we can go into the public comments.
Okay. Randy and then Sammy.
Tina, I just want to be clear that should this be rezoned to B3, and this is going back to one of the other slides you had, could because there isn't, you know, a plan in place, could that B3 be converted at a later point to residential at some events? Is that... I want to be clear whether being rezoned to B3 would indicate that you know that it could change and
I'll let Trish answer this if I'm out of order, but I think the assumption is that there would be a commercial component. Otherwise, there'd be no point of going through this exercise. So while they could have some...
But let's say they decided not to do commercial. Mm-hmm. Could it go to just a higher residential piece instead?
I believe they'd still have to do a conditional use permit for that piece regardless.
There would have to be, because they're not, as you'll see later, they're not showing the development of the commercial designated area. So they would have to come back and get a modification of the conditional use permit. But it's indicated that it would certainly be a self-defeating exercise because the density that is allowable in the R10 far exceeds what they're going to be proposing. So it seems highly unlikely, but it is possible, but they'd have to come back and get this board to approve it.
All right. Just want to be sure.
Okay, and then Sammy.
Tina, I had a question about the B3 and its proximity to other commercial zones. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, I think I heard that's a half mile. You can't. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that you can't build any commercial within a half mile radius of this zone? Or what exactly does that mean?
The way we interpret that is that it has to do with another commercial zoning district. And I I'm trying to think off the top of my head if that would be
Calvander.
So
does that mean that there can't be any more commercial between this zone and Calvander?
Using this mechanism.
Right.
But there are other mechanisms.
It could be not. It's not a prohibition on other commercial, but other B3 zoning. So there's a limitation on the.
You wouldn't be able to do any other B3s, but you could do other.
That's right.
Commercial
if you
zones.
Concluded that some other parcel was appropriate for commercial zoning. Okay. The other zoning okay. districts.
Great. Thank you.
Dan, and then we have to hear from the applicant, and I've also got 9 or 10 people signed up. Let me remind you. Go ahead.
Okay, but you might want to clarify if they want to speak to the rezoning or the CEP.
No matter what they want to speak to, I got to get to them. So.
Yeah, well, you got to get to me, too. So I have two questions. One is that on attachment F3 under plan, it's section 15-155 on PUDs. And this is not really, it's tangential to this project, but since it's coming up, I want to bring it up, that it says the non-residential portions of any planned unit development may not be occupied until all the residential portions of the development are completed or their completion is assured. And I was, you know, I can maybe imagine why that made sense when this was written sometime in the past. But it seems that our sentiment now would be that we actually want commercial completed as soon as possible and not to wait. So this is, like I said, is tangential, but I want to see if the rest of the board agrees that this is something that we should revisit if we have further PUDs. And then my other question that's specific to this project, and I'm not really clear on where we are in the land use ordinance in terms of landscaping in regard to drought resistant and, you know, the relationship of landscaping to water use. But I noticed that since the NSA plan comes into bear on this and we have that item, I guess it's 1H, that says prohibit land uses and activities which would use large quantities of water and include stringent performance standards. Does that give us the opportunity with this project, or in fact with any project in the NSA, to place a landscaping standard for the project as a condition that would relate to water use? And maybe Mike needs to answer.
I think the answer
that.
Is yes. When you get to your conditional use permit, again, this is not conditional use zoning, so it's when you get to the CUP aspect of it, it's just like any other CUP. You can impose reasonable conditions, and you may want to.
Okay, so we can talk about that then. The reason I'm raising it now is because that material's in the packet at this point. So anyway, thank you. Thanks, Mark, for indulging me.
Sure, no problem. Okay, does the applicant want to make a presentation at this time? Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I'll be very brief. My name is Phil Post. Omar Zinn's with me. We appreciate the strong support of the Environmental Advisory Board and the Planning Board for the rezoning component. The green on our illustrative plan represents the open space. One of the justifications for a PUD is that we preserve open space. This green area constitutes nearly 48%, so we believe that we're meeting not only the letter but spirit of the law, that this PUD is justified by the amount of open space that is being preserved. The second thing is that there are a few other components, particularly in the northern study area, that encourage commercial development. And, in fact, 3 years ago, those that recall the specific discussions, we were asked by advisory boards, yourselves, the public, about a commercial component. And so we're very pleased tonight. And the main reason for this, but in fact, it's a cumbersome process, but the reason for this process was to have a commercial, a small commercial component. And what our commitment is that this will be, and your ordinance is very prescient in defining a neighbor-friendly commercial component, and that's what we're proposing. In fact, in this writing here, it defines, you know, we've defined in our application what we mean by that, what we're excluding, and so we're proposing a neighbor-friendly type uses that would be on the order of doctors, a small, you know, medical office, daycare, those types of commercial uses. We've excluded any kind of high-volume retail, gasoline, fast food, things like that. And so your ordinance defines these, what a neighborhood-friendly business is, and that's what we're proposing. So that is the main component of this rezoning, is to allow that small commercial appropriately located area as we've discussed over these years.
Thanks for your responsiveness to the board's suggestion.
And I know we're not at the CUP phase yet, so I will just briefly say at this stage that initially when we started this process, we didn't know that we were going to need a complete rezoning to turn this into a separate project from Claremont Phases 1 and 2, but our intention and our plan certainly holds true to our original connection between the two, creating dual use locations for both sides of the road through our restrictive covenants. We did have to go through the rezoning to create the PUD. That was the only mechanism that would really allow us to create a commercial zone and do what we wanted to do. So as we get more into the CUP at our next hearing, I'll talk a little bit more about other items.
See you then.
Thank you.
All right. Now, I still have, 10 people signed, 9 or 10 people signed up here. I know at least one person indicated here they wanted to speak on, not on this, but on the next two. She said the next two, actually, C3 and 4. But anyway, Diane Robertson, you're signed up for the rezoning item. Do you want to speak on this, or did you want to speak more to the details of the plan in the next? Is Diane here? No,
she's at the County Commission meeting, and we'll back in a little bit.
Matthew Barton, did you want to speak to this?
I'd like to speak to the CUP.
Okay. Umberto Gutierrez?
Yeah, I'd like to speak about the connection, but I think that's
what? That would be more in the next hearing. Okay. John Killeen?
Yeah, I won't need to speak until
All right. Richard Steen or Stern? I'm not sure.
I wanted to speak on the connection.
Okay. Jen Johnston?
The same thing, please.
All right. Linda Hock?
I'll speak on
the next one.
No.
Oh, and this one.
Linda's sorry. Always the rebel. Come on.
Right now?
Come on up.
Don't be shy.
And then while Linda's coming up, Dan Tracy, were you also going to speak in this hearing, or you want to speak to the next one? And Mary Sonas.
I don't think I can read this right now.
This one or the next one?
This one.
This one, okay. So we'll hear from Linda and then Mary Sonas.
Oops, sorry. Excellent.
Okay, I'm going to try to do this quickly. I'm just going to do the highlights, and actually there's a little bit about the CUP, but that was only because it led me to the rezoning. I'm speaking as an individual Carborough resident. When the rezoning request came up in the Joint Advisory Board meeting and later in the Transportation Advisory Board where I serve, I felt compelled to abstain from voting for or against the rezoning because I didn't feel I had enough information, and this didn't seem a minor modification to me. I'm guided by the fact that a conditional use permit, and this is leading into the rezoning, application requires a new zone to meet the standards of public health, safety, and welfare. What troubled me initially and still does is the fact the proposed vision for this track includes putting a playing field under high-tension power lines. I do not believe in a progressive town this meets the highest public safety standards given the potential exists for youngsters particularly teenagers, to ignore dangers, especially when the message is it's safe for a playing field. That really troubled me, and I didn't know what the liability issues were, but I think we need to consider this. This then points to the rezoning itself. Is it appropriate for this tract of land? The rezoning request requires you to look again at this question. And then it led me to the questions that I think that the board really needs to look at, and really for all of this area. Does a rezoning forever change the area's character, creating issues related to traffic where public transportation grid is lacking, adding more and more car trips and more pollution and potential climate change? Does a PUD and commercial right up against Homestead Road destroy the scenic attractiveness of the area? Does the approval of commercial at this particular midpoint spot signal the beginnings of Homestead Road as strip development, which we have seen along Chapel Hill's Weaver Dairy Road with attendant problems? I don't understand why the vision for Claremont has to cram a playing field under high-tension power lines to meet open space requirements. I know some may say approving more density is transit-friendly, but at the same time, we need to be transit realist. And I think it's true for anything we've had a vision for, we need to look from the abstract to the concrete. Estimates suggest we will be adding some 1,000 more auto trips here a day. No light rail stop is planned. No real rapid bus service is probably going to go up there. You're never going to get enough people to ride bikes, and you can't force them to. Are we going to end up with an unattractive widened road and loss of important watershed and tree protection? Finally, this track is close to Bowling Creek and has a clear slope feeding into that creek. Has the applicant done everything possible to prep the creek, and are we abiding by the new Jordan Lake rules? These are important questions, and I ask you to carefully consider them. There are many areas in Carrboro that lend themselves to dense development, including significant commercial development. One is Carrboro Plaza, which could serve to expand our downtown to the west. Another is Jones Ferry Road. These do have transit service. I've included two articles from this week, one about why trees matter from the New York Times, and another about saving our land and protecting our water. And we need also to think about protecting future drinking sources, which for our water, and that is probably our most difficult resource to conserve in North Carolina because we depend on surface water. So anyway, that's, thank you. And if you have any questions.
Thank you, Linda.
Okay. Thanks, Linda. Mary Sonas?
While she's coming up, I just want to make sure people understand that there's a project already approved for this site that's roughly the same density, and really the question in this rezoning is to allow that project to accommodate the small commercial section. So a lot of those questions about how much traffic, the issues with Bowling Creek, et cetera, were addressed at great length in 2009 and, you know, and resolved.
Mayor.
Hi. Thank you for listening to me about this. I'm concerned about this particular area as a natural resource. I live right down the street from those two pastures, and they are directly on the UNC North forest. They connect up. And anybody who knows wildlife knows that your pasture is as important as your deep forest. That's why Mason Farm does prescribe burns, so that they have open areas. And I want you to know a little bit about this piece of land. Most evenings in the winter, you can hear the coyotes calling late at night there. And when there's a snowstorm, you come out and you can see the silhouettes of maybe 30 or 40 deer feeding there. Around January, the American woodcock starts to migrate there. They do their aerial displays there, and then they hide in the forest during the day. Their populations are reduced by 1% a year steadily because of habitat loss. And then, as of 2 weeks ago, the great horned owl was nesting maybe 100 yards from that pasture. And in UNC North, on that entire piece of forest, we have one family of great horned owls, and they live right next to that pasture. They need that pasture for hunting. They need the forest for protection. And what I'm trying to show you, by the way, this is the mother and that is one of her young. She did fledge two young, and now they're off right near that pasture and hunting it. I'm questioning what we're doing to Carrboro. I read in the newspaper that across from Carrboro Plaza, where there's a beautiful farm, they're considering putting in a strip mall. And I'm thinking to myself, a strip mall? Why? We have a strip mall across the street. And then I hear that they're going to put commercial use here, and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder what we have less of than great horned owls. And I'm thinking, well, we probably have more nail salons than great horned owls. We have more daycare centers than great horned owls. We are squandering a magnificent resource. And we're allowing strip malls to take over. We're allowing, we inch in here and we inch in there. Nobody has said, even with the connector, whether 5 years down the road it will be a new group of aldermen saying, oh, yeah, you're right, it is crowded there. We better open up that road a little bit. We better make it three lanes. What I'm addressing is the general character of the town. And I'm wondering, did we not learn enough from Greenbridge about what people in this town really want? This is what I want. I want to keep that pasture. It is a gorgeous 30 or so acres that connects to beautiful forest and then goes straight down into our water supply. We're talking our water supply. If you're talking about retention ponds, you're talking about the only green construction being the color green of the slime in the retention pond. We are talking environmentally damaging. Right next to our creek, which leads to Jordan Lake, which is our water supply. So I think we should think twice about anything that's done with this land and try our very best to stop it, to keep Carrboro what it is. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, very good. Those are the people that I have signed up for this particular public hearing, but I think...
I just had a quick
people who
question relating to Linda's point of the electric magnetic radiation.
Okay, all right. On Linda's point, go ahead.
Did we get a response from the applicant on that question that was asked on the effects of electromagnetic radiation?
I believe we did, didn't we, Trish?
Well, let me just hear from the staff.
I apologize. I was out in the hallway. So you're just asking about the topic. And we were under the impression from a staff meeting with the applicant last Tuesday that there was a report that had been done and had indicated as much in the staff report, but have since been informed by the applicant that they don't actually have a report. And with that, I'll defer to them if they wish to come up and comment on it.
let me call on Julie McClintock if you would come up real quick, and then we're going to go on to the next public hearing. I'm going to hear from most of these people, and then we'll get back to some of these issues with the applicant.
Hi, I'm Julie McClintock speaking for Friends of Bowling Creek, and I actually want to speak on both matters, so can you pretend that you're going to hear him again?
We'll manage somehow.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. I realize Dan mentioned that you all have considered this before, and I remember when it came before you. But you are having a new public hearing, and from a water quality perspective, I think that there's new information. So that's just my preamble. So Friends of Bowling Creek's mission is to protect the Bowling Creek watershed, which has been identified by the state DWQ and EPA as a 303D impaired stream. Both Chapahoe and Carrboro have received EPA grants to improve the health of the creek, and our community greatly values this natural treasure. In February of this year, we sponsored a water quality forum attended by two members of your board. At the symposium, Can We Heal Our Local Waterways?, we identified measures that can be taken by homeowners, governments, and utilities to address our local water quality problems to improve and protect our creek water quality. This plan for Claremont South does not meet those measures. It directly poses a threat to Bowling Creek and the town of Carrboro for the following reasons. First, Carrboro is now required by state law to reduce nutrient loading into Jordan Lake by 35% total nitrogen and 5% total phosphorus from the 1997 to 2001 baseline level. Carrboro is in the upper New Hope sub-watershed of the Cape Fear Basin, which feeds into Jordan Lake. Of the three sub-watersheds feeding Jordan Lake, this one has the largest nutrient reduction requirements. The plan for Claremont South will increase the amount of nutrients currently entering Bowling Creek and Jordan Lake. If you pass this development as it is proposed, Carrboro will have to eventually address this nutrient loading. It is far more effective and much cheaper to address reductions before development is put in place. If this plan is passed, taxpayers will have to foot the bill for the retrofits to try and address this problem down the line. So I talked to the planning director here in Carrboro about this and asked her, where are we in the Jordan Lake process? Well, basically, you have approved the buffer rules, and they're in place, and they're pretty good. But what hasn't been approved is the nutrient piece, which has gone on to DWQ and probably will be approved by the Environmental Management Commission in June. So it's coming very soon. The second item is that this development contains a very high percentage of impervious surface. While the proposed sediment ponds may address peak flows, they do not address the total volume of stormwater entering Bowling Creek. This results in erosive flows, reduction of groundwater, and decreased water quality. I think we've all noticed the drop in volume in Bowling Creek over time. These are the same issues which have led to Bowling Creek's impairment, which we are now struggling to mitigate. Carrboro has taken many progressive actions to protect creeks and the environment, such as establishing these stream buffers. Please don't let a hasty move here determine the long-term economic and environmental health of Carrboro. The bottom line is that it is always a lot cheaper to bring about reductions in connection with new development now rather than coming back later and trying to fix it. So in summary, there are three different ways to mitigate water going into Bowling Creek. The first is the buffers, which you all have addressed. The second are volume controls, which are not in your ordinance, and that addresses the amount of stormwater that leaves the site before the development and then after. And if you have a really good ordinance, you don't have any more leaving than before. And finally, you have control for nutrient loading, and you guys are halfway there, but it isn't going to happen until June. So what I'm saying to you is I think it would be really, while the staff has done their job, and technically speaking, the applicant is meeting the ordinance as written right now, since the ordinance is going to change very quickly, it would make a lot of sense for you all to ask the applicant to figure out a way how the stormwater can be treated for nitrogen and meet these standards. Now, thank you.
Thank you.
Ron. Okay. All right. So is there a staff presentation on the third public hearing? Come on up and let's hear that. And then I'm going to call on... I'm going to call her in the next public hearing. Well,
I'm here to speak on this opening. Is that what we're on?
Right.
Okay, well, then come on up, Dan.
It's hard to be in two places at once.
Okay, thank you for giving me a chance to speak before you move on to the next agenda. Can everybody hear me? I've lived in Carrboro since 1991. I would say that as I look back, that was the beginning of some of the demographic changes that we see today. But even with those changes, Carrboro was able to develop a reputation that changed from being the mill town on the other side of the tracks to a bedroom community for Chapel Hill to what we like to think of now as the Paris of the Piedmont, and still retain its unique character. We've just celebrated 100 years of Carrboro and saw lots of pictures and of what Carrboro was like, and I was struck by how remarkably the same in vision and visually Carrboro still is, even with the changes. we have a reputation that's based on our difference from Chapel Hill as being quirky, having good schools, progressive ideas, and values. I've had the opportunity to address the aldermen and various boards in Chapel Hill and Carrboro over issues of development, density, and the environment. And while I think my concern about this rezoning request is related to those same issues, I want to speak about a specific value that I believe deserves your full attention, and I dare say many of the citizens of our town value, and that is our brand. Because I think that the decision you make on this matter, as you have made on other matters regarding the density and look of Carrboro, will result in Carrboro becoming just another town in the U.S. rather than a small southern university town with progressive attitudes. I believe that our brand has to do with what people think of when they think of Carrboro. Residents and visitors talk about and perceive the Carrboro brand as quirky, different, good schools, pastoral neighbors, progressive, even walkable. And why do the issues of growth and density spark such controversy and concern when they come up? And I think it has to do with the fact of growth not necessarily making us better, but just bigger. This brand has economic value. And the developers are very well aware of that value and use it to leverage the value of their developments. The question for you as elected officials and representatives of the citizen is what does Carrboro receive in exchange and what is the economic value to us of our brand? Are we ruining the brand by continuing to build more and more 1990s and 1980s style housing developments and ignoring the environmental and building advances that are more appropriate for our size in 2012? Will this overstock of empty buildings in Carrboro and Chapel Hill result in the values of real estate and housing being reduced? While there is much conversation about workforce and affordable housing, none of the plans that have been introduced will really make a dent in this. And long after the developers have cashed out, we will still be talking about this while land, trees, water, and air are compromised and our brand diminished. If we are so different and progressive, why are we not looking at communities who have taken steps towards sustainability, such as Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon, that have implemented low-impact development guidelines for their developments and redevelopments? Rather than leading, we are falling behind the times by following developer-driven ideas of what we need and should look like around growth and change. And our conversations around growth and change always start from the point of view of what the developer wants rather than what is truly sustainable for Carrboro's needs. Parenthetically, someone brought up, will this growth along Homestead Road result in the widening of Homestead Road in the same way that we're seeing the widening of Weaver Dairy? And then what does that say about the quality of life and the traffic and all the other things that come along with that? So as a friend who was discussing this with me said about Carrboro and comparing it to someplace else, he said, for example, Huntersville has more progressive vision of their development than we do with regards to stormwater regulation. He had some other ideas about how we could be developing that didn't have anything to do with housing, but might be leveraging our athletes and interest in the outdoors and in building something that would attract people. And he gave examples of the velodrome that they built in Rock Hill, South Carolina, the whitewater. You know, there are other kinds of athletic facilities that bring people here for other reasons other than to buy houses. Carrboro is small enough that if the housing, suburban, neo-urban sprawl continues, we will have determined our character for the foreseeable future, and we will not be able to undo what we have done. Part of the brand, our brand, is that we are the densest community in the state, but we still have a pastoral community that sustains a unique quality of life, and that does not exist in many other places. If we are to be a community that walks the walk of our talk, we should do what is necessary to protect the unique brand that we still have, and that requires leadership and vision and probably some courage. This rezoning does not enhance our brand, but rather locks us into an old model of development that gives us more, but not necessarily better. What kind of development and growth supports our brand is the question that I'm asking you to consider. And that's what you should be looking at when you make these decisions.
So, I mean, but help me out, because there's a huge development that's already approved for this site. And I mean,
they're being asked to rezone that for something else, though.
So they could build, like, a coffee shop and some other things there.
And
is there a better place to build a coffee shop than there? Or?
Well, I think there are also some other townhouses and other things that would increase the density of that development. And, you know, maybe if I'd known about that development, I'd be giving you a different talk before you had approved that. But you're right. You've approved something already. The question is, what kinds of, and that links to what Julie was saying, what kinds of requirements will you make to make sure that it fits in with the brand and the character of this community? That's the question. And, you know, there are ways of answering that that really benefit Carrboro and what we have here. And, you know, you all are going to be dead like me, but Carrboro's going to move on. Do you want to be the people that, you know, moved Carrboro in the direction that is unsustainable, or do you want to go down as the people in history that, you know, put their foot down and said, look, we can only be this. We can't do everything and be everything. And we've got to protect certain things that are that matter, and we start from there and then move forward.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Could we hear the staff presentation on the third public hearing and then...
This is a quasi-judicial hearing, so everybody will need to be sworn in to testify.
Good evening.
James.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, sorry. Good evening. I'll be brief with my presentation. Tonight we're here to discuss a conditional use permit for a planning and development. Many are aware of the property in question. I'm just going to kind of highlight the two different aspects. First aspect being the residential portion. Once again, properties in excess of 38 acres. The applicant is intending or requesting to rezone that to R10, which in essence means 10,000 square feet of land area per dwelling unit. The applicant could put a maximum of 149 units on that property. They intend or are requesting tonight with their CUP is a 92 units. They came to the Board of Aldermen back in the end of 2010 and spoke in regards to the affordable housing aspect. The applicant is not doing an affordable housing aspect of this. In essence, they will actually be doing a size-limited housing portion. I've notated here the actual red stars are notating the units that will be 1,100 square feet, and that will make up 15% of the units. And then the actual green ones will be limited to 1,350 square feet house sizes, and that will make up 10%. Quickly going on to the commercial aspect, they're allowed to do a maximum of 10% under the planned unit development. Once again, this applicant is doing a little in excess of 1 acre. Once I'll just say that they, when they do in the future decide to change that property, they will be required to go through a conditional use permit. This property in question, just connectivity. Presently, what is being shown tonight is the fire. There's a fire access and bike pedestrian. And then they are showing actual street right-of-way connections to the Carolina North property. They are not they're not actually doing improvements. That would be basically pavement to the property lines, but they are showing right-of-way to being stubbed out. All the streets are built to public street standards, installing 5-foot width sidewalks. One of the issues notated in my staff report is the greenway along Bowling Creek. Staff has met within the past couple weeks with a developer about doing a payment in lieu due to the fact that the town of Carrboro is presently working with an outside consultant who is designing a
greenway up along Bowling Creek. And I did include that cost estimate from Phil Post in your packet tonight. They will still be building a greenway from the actual subdivision to be connecting to the Bowling Creek. That they will be doing. But they will be making a payment in lieu for the rest of the greenway.
Including the portion that would come under the bridge or that kind of thing?
That is correct. Just to say, this is, the plans are presently showing them building a greenway from here to Homestead Bridge, and then they would build a walkway underneath that bridge, and then it would actually snake up.
Right.
And they intend not to do that, but instead make a
payment in lieu.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's due to tree removal. We did update and put on your desk or in front of you tonight. They will be removing 78 specimen trees. The reason for this is obviously due to infrastructure, but there'll be a total of 11 detention basins, and there's three large detention bases, but then there's approximately eight detention. They're more like detention basins that will be behind single-family residences. They're not as large as the three larger ones. They'll be installing a type A buffer along Homestead. The applicant is providing an excess of 17 acres of open space. They will be providing a tot lot. It's hard to see, but I will point it out. The tot lot is right here. And one of the things that Omar spoke about earlier is the actual, they will be amending the Claremont Phase 1, 2, and 3 to include this new project, if you approve it tonight, to allow the members of this new subdivision to use the pool and recreation amenities of Phase 1, 2, and 3. There is a ball play field that will be under the Duke Power easement. And they are meeting Section 15263 of the LUO. And I just want to point out, in the future, when they do come before the board to develop the B3 zoning district, they will need to meet the stormwater regulations of that time. This is just vernacular architecture of the homes that they are proposing. Just want to include that in the staff report. And then I actually included all the staff recommendations. I'm not going to go over those independently, but I would like to point out staff did add one additional condition today, and basically that's number 13, that the applicant must demonstrate compliance with Section 15269.4, which is basically diffuse flow requirements of the LUO prior to construction plan approval. That one has been added as of today. And I did include all the advisory board recommendations if you guys have any questions about those.
Okay. So. All right. Great. Thanks. Let me...
I just ask a quick question?
I'm trying to just think about the most efficient way to get through all of this.
It's related to
okay, go ahead.
Point. With the trees that have been reduced, the question of, are these retention ponds new since the last time this was seen by the board? And is that the reason why there are more trees that are being cut this time?
No, it's actually, it was in the past, back in 2009 when it was approved in the past, but it was kind of like it was later in the review process where they added these smaller detention basins. And the reason for that is because they couldn't get the flow of those particular lots to go into one of the three major detention basins.
So when that was approved, the same amount of trees that are proposed today was also being proposed then?
I believe so, yes. Yes. That's one of the big keys for the additional removal of the trees is those smaller biogardens.
Thanks.
Mark? In the interest of efficiency, would you entertain a motion that we're not going to reopen the Colfax connector question this evening?
Yeah, is that Does the attorney have any problem with having a motion along those lines?
No.
Okay. So I'll take that as a motion that from Dan.
I would like to hear from the planning board first, just because they did.
Well, let me see whether there's.
I'm not suggesting anyone can't speak.
Well, let me.
Right, but that would inform my decision on whether to go along with that or not.
Okay.
Well, is there a second for Dan's motion?
Second.
All right. Okay, who is here from the planning department, from the planning board? Oh, that's right, yes, and Matthew is here as well. Would you come up and address the board real quick? Remind me your name. I'm sorry, we just met.
John.
Thanks. So specifically, the reasons we recommend... Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I certainly do.
Thank you.
Okay, so we made this recommendation based on consistency with three specific plans, three specific references to town plans. And the first is with the connector roads policy, which has been mentioned previously. So that was also cited in a northern study area, small area plan, and they encourage grid-like network design, which connects new and existing developments within one another and disperses automobile traffic among multiple routes, allows efficient access for public transit and town service vehicles. The presence of multiple routes would reduce the pressure on any one roadway, it says, thereby eliminating the need for multi-lane facilities, which would fracture the study area. So that's how it's incorporated into the Northern Study Area small plan, the connector roads policy. In addition to that, in the staff reporting, the land use ordinance is cited, and it states that 1524 in the land use ordinance requires new subdivisions to tie into anticipated streets outside the development, thereby providing connectivity to the town's public road system. To this end, Claremont South Subdivision has provided street connectivity to Colfax Drive and provided a sub out to the adjacent property to the west. So the sensation, I think, is that the developer is trying to help us implement these plans. We have consistency among them. So the other thing, the only other addition I'd like to make, that we didn't state this specifically. We mentioned the Northern Study Area small plan and small area plan and the connector roads policy, but we did not mention how Carver Revision 2020 in the transportation planning section reinforces this. In point 4.1.2, the town should continue to implement its connectors road policy. So that basis of consistency in town plans reminded us. Encouraged us to make the recommendation.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
All right. Is there...
there was a motion.
Yeah, all those in favor...
Can I
have a question? Just a question before.
Well, go ahead. What's your question?
Well, I think, Dan, will you repeat the motion? It was basically that...
That we're not going to revisit the question of the Colfax connection.
Right, and my question was, is what is presented on this plan in terms of the connector, is it the same as what we agreed on last time?
Yes. That's what the staff report
exactly
stipulates.
Okay.
Which is bollards and...
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure it was the same.
So point number 23 on this one, this sheet, page 5, is the same condition as what I'm understanding.
You guys are just determined to discuss the thing you don't want to do. Go ahead. Did you have something else?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Not me.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. All right. Now, I would like to call on, would the applicant be willing? We have about 5 more people to speak. Would you like to go before them or after them?
And we just voted not to have the connector.
I think it makes sense to hear from them, and then y'all can respond to all the various
issues.
Clarify
that one more time so that the audience understands that the connector is not going to be
The board just voted unanimously not to take another look at the connection issue. So there will be no change to what was decided 5 years ago or whatever.
3 years ago.
3 years ago.
It'll be the same
or 5 years ago for that matter. So it'll be the same street connection there. All the other issues are still on the table. Mary.
I have a question. I'd like to know, I know that they've approved this development, but if you find out, say, after you're going to approve a surgery, that the person doesn't have a tumor and doesn't need the surgery, do you go ahead with the surgery anyway? We found
Mark, she needs to be sworn if she's speaking.
I thought maybe you had a procedural question, which I'm willing to entertain, but that sounds like more of a substantive issue. So we've already heard your points at the public hearing. all right. The board is not going to entertain the possibility of making any changes to the road situation at Colfax. Matthew Barton, you are signed up.
Hi, my name is Matthew Barton. I live on Stratford Drive.
And what would you like me to swear?
I solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge.
I do.
Thank you.
So at this point, I'd like to reaffirm my support of the town's connector policy. I'm frankly surprised and dismayed at the way that you're conducting the public hearing, but I'll get over it. I have one question that I'd like to hear put on the record, since you yourself, Mr. Mayor, raised this earlier. At what point would you consider opening up that connection? I've heard references to other additional development that has not occurred, so I'd beg you to explain.
We're scheduling a review of the Connector Road policy, and I think that's the point where we would address questions like that, not to put you off, but I think the board has requested that, and I believe planning. I'm sorry, thank you. That basically we will have that review of the Connector Road policy, and that's when, by whatever we've learned in recent years could be applied to that policy with an understanding of exactly the kinds of questions you're asking as to when do we make these kind of connections, and to have something we can understand more consistently as we develop throughout the town.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Humberto Gutierrez Rivas. You're good. Richard Steen.
Stern.
All right, you're good. Jen Johnston. Dan Tracy.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Thank you.
So I'm just here to enter into the record my wish that the connection to Colfax as a connector be reconsidered. I'm a resident of Stratford Drive, which is currently the only route between Homestead Road and Greensboro Road. This development is going to increase traffic. It is going to increase traffic on my street. I like seeing all of my neighbors drive down Stratford Drive. I like seeing your smiling faces, but I really would like to have the burden shared by others in my community. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That is the last person I have signed up. Is there anybody else who wanted to speak? John, come up, John.
Sure, yeah. Thank you. I'll make this really brief.
I'll believe it when I see it.
I just wanted to say something else, and not on behalf of the planning board necessarily, though it was something that was in the planning board comments. I feel that it's important to point out that the criteria for these units being more affordable, though there's not an affordable housing component met in this development as it stands. I think that we run the risk in this town of having an unarticulated policy where affordable housing is concerned, and that leads us to look at things like reduced square footage and disamenities as factors that reduce the cost of housing. And something that was stated in the presentation to the planning board was that the more affordable units in this, the ones that start at $200,000 or so and upward, they are not only smaller in square footage, but they're directly adjacent to the high-tension power lines in the utility easement. And I feel like it's really important to press forward with a more specific plan for how we do build in affordable housing in Carborough, which we don't have a whole lot of. There might be a glut of housing, but who can afford it is my question. So I would just suggest that instead of allowing things like disamenities and really reduced square footage for people who buy homes in Carborough, we work out a more articulated plan.
Can I respond to that, Mark?
Sure, in brief.
I will, in brief. I think what's happening is that the model that we had that was working for a while with the land trust model, with changes in federal government regulations and changes in the income in the metropolitan area that we're part of, is shifting how that model works and making the model not as workable as it had been, and was forcing us into a position of building like one-bedroom condos, was forcing the Orange Community Land Trust into that position. There was a glut of one-bedroom condos, which really isn't who we need to be serving. So you're right. The model is no longer working like at the moment, and we are beginning to reopen that conversation, as is the Orange Community Land Trust. So it's a shifting of demographics and finance.
Dan, and then I have one or two more people.
Okay, I want to ask the applicant about John's point, which if he's making a presentation, are you going to come up? And okay, so I can hold that question until.
Okay, I don't know.
It's not to you. Yeah.
Go ahead, Sam.
Thanks.
Oh, okay. Well, let me, Linda, you want to just say one more thing? The CUP. Come on up.
Just a couple of quick things. One, because Sammy brought up about the high tension wires. I didn't want to get into the electromagnetic thing, but I welcome that as well. But my concern was first and foremost an immediate safety concern with the CUP, that a playing field under the power lines is, I know some developers in other places and a few power companies have talked about this, but it's been mainly next to, not under. And I feel we need to know what other communities are doing, because as far as I could understand, we don't know about other communities that have allowed playing fields under. I mean, I've seen tennis courts next to and are utilized there, but this is under, which I think points to some issues with the CUP, that the open space, we would put a playing field under there. I was surprised tonight to hear about 11 retention ponds. The retention ponds that I've seen haven't worked in, so 3 was a lot. 11 were little ones, just at compounds, I think, the issues that we talked about. And remember, I didn't vote one way or the other on this project, but these are just issues I think that the board really needs to consider as you go forward. But thank you.
Thanks, Linda.
Okay. Was there anybody else who wanted to?
I just have a question.
Diane, come up to the podium, please.
Yes.
Since you are the fiscal.
You need to get sworn.
We have to get you sworn.
I didn't swear before.
I know.
I'll swear now.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes, I swear for this and for whatever else I said before. Just, you know, when we do these residential units, it's my understanding that, you know, they actually add a tax burden to the community in terms of the services that are required, and particularly the schools. So what is the plan for the developer to help us address that, as we are already have very overcrowded schools here and services are, you know, increasing in cost, and as we approve residential, we exacerbate that problem? So just a question for you to get in the record.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. At this point, Lydia.
I just wanted to briefly address the comments made by Matthew Barton and also by the Planning Board and the gentleman who lived on Stratford Drive. It was with regard to our decision to not consider the connection to Colfax again. And I just wanted to say that what I did in arriving at my decision was I remembered what this was like when we discussed it on March 17, 2009, a little over 3 years ago. And I, in fact, spent some time reviewing the record of that meeting, because I recall for myself, it was a pretty hard decision for me to make. And I recall we had a lot of testimony and a lot of passion on both sides of that issue. And I recall at the end of that evening really feeling confident in my decision that we would not have a connection at that time, but that we would clearly put up ballards constructed in a way with signage that indicated that a future connection might be there, okay? So I didn't want anyone to think that, at least me, and I don't know if anyone else feels the same way, it's not that I discount anyone's opinion about this, but nothing has changed in the 3 years since then that would have caused me to change my decision.
all right, I would like to hear from Braxton Fushi, who's going to be the last member of the public to speak in this hearing, and then I want to hear from the applicant.
I'm Braxton Fushi. I'm just appalled that we haven't had a discussion about affordable housing in this town, and there is none in this project. And the owner said that $300,000 was a starter house. And yes, you did. And I'm not going to debate you, but you said it. Because I question you on that.
He said two, Braxton. It was 200,000.
Well, somebody said 200 at one point.
Yeah, he said 200,000.
Well,
at the last meeting.
The area that I was asking about, he said it was 300,000, and that's on the inside of the project.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Not quote, affordable housing, because that is not affordable housing for the people that I know and that I represent. Not 200,000. And at some point, you as a board have got to have some kind of conversation about what is affordable housing in this town, because we don't have that stock, and it's not being built. And it's up to you to decide when you're going to have that conversation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That's a good point, Braxton. All right. The applicant, Omar or Phil or whoever.
You can go first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do. Thank you. Well, not in there. Again, my name is Phil Post. I just wanted to, I was just going to address the stormwater issue that had been raised in a couple questions. I just was going to spend a minute on it. I'm available for any questions. First of all, we support the 13 staff conditions, and we ask for your approval tonight of the CUP and the rezoning. And, of course, this is the CUP plan that fleshes all this out. I know you've heard discussion. This is the B3 parcel right here. I just want to restate that, because it's been confusing as I've heard about it, that this, the approval of this CUP tonight does not allow us to do any work whatsoever on this B3 parcel. And so that if any work, any new development is to occur of any kind, that we will come back, we would come back to you with a CUP application so that, anyway, if it's clear, it was unclear to me, I just want to reiterate that. There have been questions earlier through these discussions about the stormwater plan, and in fact, there was some maybe some misunderstanding on the part of the public, but I'd like to just, for instance, Julie McClintock and others have correctly pointed out to you that you have made your ordinance more robust with the stream buffers, and we're in compliance with that. And I mention that because the Bowen Creek stream buffer is down here like that, and all our development is way uphill from that stream buffer. And it remains exactly the way it was 3 years ago in all respects from that. There's a couple other areas. There was some misinformation given to you about volume because Ms. McClintock mentioned that if you, the most desirable ordinance would control runoff so that the runoff that's occurring now would occur after all this is built. And that is, in fact, what this plan does. There are three detention ponds here, and there are also eight smaller rain gardens that provide that. And what that does is provide the volume control that I think Ms. McClintock was urging and hoping that would occur, and I want to assure you that that is occurring here. And lastly, there are new Jordan buffer requirements, which we are meeting and will meet and have discussed, which involve diffuse flow. So we have the stream buffers. We have the water quality treatment. We have the volume control. And then at the final outletting of this, where the existing quantity of water is the same as it is now, it's in the form of a diffuse flow, which is even really better than what's occurring now. In other words, in today's world, as fields and all, it leaves our site in sort of a concentrated form. And we are going to, it will leave in our site in the same quantity and rate, but in a diffuse way. And so we feel like we're meeting not only the letter and spirit, but also these forthcoming requirements. And so we point that out to you. And I'll stop right there, available for any questions, but I just want to explain that. The stormwater.
So I just want to clarify, you're saying that you're meeting the requirements that we're going to be voting on after EMC approves the Jordan rules, the nitrogen and phosphorus removal.
With respect to...
You're saying you're complying by that with the current plan?
With respect to volume control, stream buffers, water quality, and diffuse flow. Yes, we are.
Does that include... I don't know enough about the nitrogen and phosphorus removal. I'm just...
Well, the nitrogen and phosphorus removal is a little interesting. Of course, your regulations aren't in place, and we are meeting the existing regulations, but the existing tactics we're using are twofold. One is the wet detention pond tactic, which is the same that will be required under the new Jordan rules. Same, in other words, the same exact tactic. And then our rain garden proposal is also, there's other names for it, bioretention rain gardens, but that is the same tactic that we used under the new rules. So as the testimonies occurred in the advisory boards, the outcome will be exactly the same, but we're reinforced by these other things, the volume control, the diffuse flow, and the enhanced buffers.
You answered me, and I'm still, because EAB talked about this, I'm not hearing that you're saying that you're going to meet the nitrogen and phosphorus removal requirements. I'm hearing you talk about the other three things, components of the Jordan rules that you're going to be meeting. And I know legally we cannot require that because we haven't voted on it. So I understand that. And so I'm asking the board to consider what we might need to do about that, because it seems negligent to me for us to approve something that we know we're going to be approving soon and we're going to apply to other developments.
It's not about the developer.
I'm just offering that out.
I'm looking at comments.
I have a question for Trish and then a comment. So someone said that we would be updating those regulations as early as June. Is that correct?
You
solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
The EMC is looking at our draft ordinance with regard to the requirements for new development. So Jordan Lake Rules has a variety of provisions. We have adopted the buffer provisions. The next round of regulations we have to adopt are those that apply to new development. And you all did see a draft of that ordinance back in September, and it does include specific nitrogen and phosphorus levels for stormwater management. We do not have a total volume control requirement in our ordinance. We have peak flow volume, to respond to the question you were exploring earlier. And so the project does comply with the peak flow volume issues and the pre and the post in that regard, but it isn't the total volume, which I think is a distinction between the comments that were made to you with regard to the comments offered in February at the water quality.
If that review is completed and we approve that change to the ordinance by point X, whatever point X would be in their subsequent review of Claremont South, can we stipulate as a condition that, you know, there's some point at which it would make sense in terms of their construction of the project that we could adopt whatever are the regulations in place?
I don't think that would be the case unless they were to agree to that with regard to the project that's designed already. But, the expectation is, and James touched on this in his slide, is that the B3 piece of this will be subject to any new stormwater requirements that kick in subsequent to the approval.
And would that affect the entire
No,
project,
that would then? Just affect the B3, the piece that's not currently in the CUP. We do expect to bring the draft ordinance to you, set a public hearing in May, and then set the public hearing for the end of June, the ordinance that's in front of the EMC right now.
Let me be clear.
Okay.
If the applicant was agreeable to abide by those new requirements, could we put a condition in the COP that they would do so? And I think we'd have to specify a date or a point in the review by which they would have to be in place for that to be required.
I think that if you could offer a condition and they were willing to accept
okay.
it.
Okay. And what would that reasonable date be, where things are not too far along in terms of their planning or actual development of the property physically?
I think it would likely be in conjunction with construction plan approval for the project.
Okay.
Be a time frame.
All right.
That would be the next step for this project.
Okay. So then, Omar, would you all be agreeable to a condition like that?
I'd like to talk about that, Dan.
Okay.
I'd like to do my own little presentation and discussion.
Okay.
And we can continue to discuss that, if you don't mind.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Speaking of which, why don't you?
Okay, thank you.
Do that.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak. My name is Omar Zinn, and I have been a resident of Carlow since 1972. And in 2007, the board approved Claremont Phase 1 through 3. In 1997, you approved the modification, the major modification to our CUP for phases 4 and 5. And then I returned back here in 2000 and about 18 months ago to discuss with you the current state of the housing market and how the current plan with the current approved CUP was difficult for me to swallow. The affordable housing ordinance, which we complied with back in 2009, puts a significant strain on the developer to make very good money on each unit to be able to provide affordable housing at a loss to the Community Land Trust. So here I am back before you, 18 months later, with this modified plan, which is basically the exact same street layout. When you move street layout, you change drainage. When you change drainage, you have to work with Sungate and the engineering department of Carrboro, and that takes a long time. So it's taken me 18 months to get back up here before you, and I'm glad to finally be here. The street layout, like I said, is the exact same layout with the addition of... is there a pointer here? With the addition of this rear-loaded alley right here. The houses that once were townhomes are now single-family houses. And now, instead of meeting the affordable housing ordinance, which is an option in Carrboro, we're meeting the 25% size limited ordinance. And you already know all this. Some of this I'm providing for the people out there in the audience who weren't here 18 months ago, who weren't here 3 years ago. We have the exact same play field in place, which I will get to and discuss. We have the exact same tot lot. We have the exact same 11 retention ponds. And the ponds are all based on grade. We have areas back here that simply cannot reach this pond here. That's why the retention ponds are in place below these lots, because water falls to its lowest point. Sometimes drains can be manipulated through swales to reach an intended destination. But in this case, and in a few cases back here, it's just simply an impossibility. And if we own some of this land back here, it would be possible, but we don't. That's Carolina land that we don't own. So we discussed the commercial zone, which is now in place, which we have in place. And installing this B3 commercial actually forced us to rezone the entire property. We didn't know that at the time, but, you know, through trial and tribulation with the help of your excellent staff in the zoning department, this is where we've arrived at. What was once Claremont Phases 4 and 5 is now Claremont South, with the same intended sharing of amenities back and forth across the street, with the same connector path, which now we're making a payment in lieu to the town of Carrboro for their construction of this path, with the same tot lot and the same play field. The play field, Sammy made an inquiry as to, well, you know, what is going on here with the play field? What type of research have you done, is what James Thomas asked me. I said, well, you know, someone over here did do some research. We didn't do the research, but a homeowner who bought one of the affordable units and a homeowner who bought one of the Margaret units did some research and found that the milligauss, I believe, is the actual unit of measurement, at their house, at the alleyway, was measured at 1.8 milligauss, whereas the milligauss that a microwave throws off is 3.0 milligauss. I know that it's not ideal to have a play field underneath the power line. Okay, there is area over here outside of the actual easement, outside of this easement, about 80 to 90 feet by several hundred feet, going all the way up here to maybe 40 or 50 feet. That is outside of the power line. The town of Carrboro has certain classifications in terms of open space, which we've abided by. There's primary constraints and there's secondary constraints. Primary constraints is where a developer always starts, and that starts with the woods, with your hardwoods. Okay? Your secondary constraints include your power lines and your homestead road buffer. We have provided over 40% open space in this development, and we've done it in a way to follow your ordinance. I know that there's been discussion tonight about new Jordan Lake watershed rules that are coming into effect. Usually I would, you know, in any case, oh, you know, whatever we have to do, but I mean, the housing market is not what it once was. And we have followed this ordinance for 3 years. We have followed the ordinance from 18 months ago. I can't always hit a moving target. If you tell me I have to have an airbag in my car in 1987, by the time the car is manufactured, 1992, is that really fair to me? So I understand your desire and the want for me to follow this ordinance, which may be approved in June. I do understand it. But at this point, I would like to respectfully decline due to all of the time and money that we have invested to get to this point and the fact that we have followed current regulations and that we exist under current regulations and that this plan follows current regulations. If there are any other questions, I'd feel free to answer them. But I just wanted to give a little bit of background of where we're from and where we're at.
Okay. Are there some specific questions for Omar on any of the particulars, Dan and then Lydia?
Yeah. What under the phase 3 and 4 that's currently in place? What's the number of units under what's currently approved?
Right here.
96, and so you're reducing that to 92.
There were 96 units, now there are 92 units, and the B3 commercial zone.
Okay. And in terms of John Colleen's question about, you know, all the size-limited housing being kind of stacked against the back of the property there, did you look at the possibility of dispersing those more and... How was that decided, or is this what had to work with the road plan, or how did that come about?
Well, I think we have two or three here, Dan, and I think we have the remainder here, with two of these units being market-rate houses right here. And, you know, these areas are, I mean, sure, they're not distributed completely throughout the neighborhood. I'll admit it. These areas are more difficult to sell than these areas right here. And I'm providing a size-limited unit at a reduced price because ultimately square footage determines the cost of a house. And so we're trying to meet the ordinance. We have some distribution right here and right here. And we're trying to meet the ordinance and provide size-limited housing at areas which... quite frankly, you know, are not as desirable. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you.
No, I understand that. Am I remembering correctly that there was not a rezoning when you first, you know, in 2009? That's
correct.
Okay. And then my last question is, I raised the point about the landscaping earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any problem with a stipulation in regard to drought-resistant or whatever the correct terminology
would
be?
I prefer native species in terms of house landscaping.
Uh-huh.
Along Homestead Road, you know, I prefer to have some flexibility here. We got stuck with native species as a buffer, and that's a large constraint there when, you know, you can put a few evergreens here mixed in with your wax myrtles, your...
I'm thinking, you know, specifically in terms of the notion of water usage, what connects to water, so really in the yards of the individual homes.
I like the idea of native species, you know, because native species are used to this climate zone, so, you know, their demands are less.
Okay,
although
thanks.
Bermuda grass might not be native to this, you know, area, but Bermuda grass is, you know, the intelligent grass to install for low water usage as well. So I don't want to get stuck by that ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, and I like to follow it, but Bermuda grass, a perfect example of, you know, a species that's not native to you know, Chapel Hill, but I would like to use.
Okay. Lydia and then Randy.
I have two questions, Omar. One is with regard to these rules that may take effect soon, that may take effect in June, that you are not in kind to bargain on. Can you articulate for someone who's a layperson what extra would it mean for you to do in order to meet those new standards?
I'd like for Phil to address that question, please.
Well, the short answer is we're not exactly sure, and so that's why it's really hard to agree to it. One of the aspects is, and I'll just ask because I don't know the answer. In your draft ordinance, do you have the buy down as part of the? So what the state has done is said, you don't have to do anything on your land. You can not, well, you have to do some things, but you can actually pay money and not do anything. And so we actually think this is a superior solution for Carver because we're providing a full water quality treatment system. And under your new rules, we could just give a certain amount of money and do nothing. And those nutrients and phosphorus would all go. So it's sort of a two-answer question. I want to go back to my original thing, which was the strategy that we will use under the new ordinance is going to be the same thing. We're going to use wet detention ponds and bioretention. Those are the two most effective things for removing nitrogen and phosphorus. So it's at least possible that the plan under the new system would be almost exactly the same. But you would also be giving these the option of doing less than we're doing now. And I think the best thing for Carborough and for the developer is, and for actually the town, since it's pretty much been reviewed and approved right down to the last nickel and teaspoonful, is to go with this plan. It's a fully fleshed out plan that we know provides 100% treatment. I mean, is this distinction kind of clear? That
you know, it's
instead
clear
of providing 100% treatment, you can buy it down. You can pay a certain amount of money and do 60% treatment.
As clear as a detention pond, is that what you're
saying? Right. I mean, it's as clear as I can understand, which I'm admittedly not nearly well educated in this area. I don't know if Trish has anything she wants to add to this or not.
I did shake my head in response to the beginning of Phil's question. So, but the draft ordinance that we have prepared doesn't have a full buy down option. It has an offset. The Jordan Lake rules allow for you to provide stormwater devices that have to meet a certain level of nitrogen and phosphorus removal, and then you can get down to that level, and then you can pay the remainder. You can make a payment for the remainder. That is the way our ordinance is set up. So it's not a complete substitution. Pardon me?
Phil's right to some degree.
Oh, sure. It just isn't a complete. Absolutely. I was just building on what he said to say it wasn't an absolute trade-off.
It's not a zero. It doesn't go to zero.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that it's not. No.
Okay.
I wasn't sure.
No, that's good.
No, that's
good clarification.
Okay. That's helpful. Okay, great. And then here's my other question. It's a different topic. Omar, there are a few conditions that the TAB requested in their recommendations. One was regarding the sidewalk between the two portions, to have the sidewalk be 8 feet, a minimum of 8 feet. Mm-hmm. One was a bike rack out of the top lot. Another one was to have wayfinding signs. Are you inclined to agree with those three conditions?
Well, I mean, previously I'd say that I agree with all of the 13 staff recommendations, which meet the LUO. Can we continue our discussions just to, I don't want to say yes or no. I mean, sometimes you start agreeing to one thing, and then, okay, will you agree to
another
this?
Thing.
Will you agree to this? Will you agree to this?
All right, those are three to consider as we keep talking.
Okay. I would just like to keep the discussion open at this point.
Great, thank you.
Okay, Mandy, and then I have a question.
I'm really glad Lydia raised point, and she got called on before. I asked about the nutrient control. I realize that you're in an awkward position with less than 90 days to go before this could possibly be, this plan could be in place. We're very close to that point. I look at it that, this plan could be one of the last that would be in place and not have to meet those goals, and that kind of disturbs me. I'd be much happier if I felt that, between yourself and Phil, you could figure out some way that you can work with staff to look at the nutrient levels much more
carefully. We don't have that piece in place. I appreciate Phil saying that, you know, Carborough does a good job with buffers. I appreciate that you're doing what you can to, you know, well, you're going to meet our peak load. We don't, here in Carborough, we don't do what we, the best we can in terms of volume. I know in Chapel Hill, in the symposium that came out, Kimberly Brewer shared, that Chapel Hill does a much better job in terms of looking at volume in future. I hope that Carborough will do that as well. Everything has been screwy for the last couple of years, and the economics are awful. But you've got a piece of property that's sitting right on top of, you know, surface water. And that particular area is one that is hugely coveted by this, this community. I would like personally, I would want greater reassurance that you think again about meeting with staff and looking to address the nutrient issues.
I don't understand what you mean by coveted by the community.
This is a community that, I look at, the efforts to preserve the Adams Tract and other lands in and around Bowling Creek, and this sits right there on the creek. And, nutrients that aren't captured are going to the creek.
It's in a prut.
Well, I realize it's a prut, but what I'm saying is because what's going to be happening in June, we're so close to the June date, I would just like to see a little more effort put in to meet those same standards that in 90 days will change.
Okay. So here, that kind of leads into my question, if I may. I want to make sure I have this right, or I'm really understanding this issue correctly. So back in 2009 or leading up to 2009, when you got this plan that's shown up there approved, you did an entire stormwater management plan for the site for 96 houses and townhomes.
Yes.
You're bringing back a plan which has 92 dwellings and then some commercial space. Do we have any definition for how much commercial space we're talking about? I mean, how many square feet, or do we have any? Is there anything that kind of pins that down right at this point? It's only neighborhood commercial, so obviously there's only so much. It's not. You're not going to sneak a Target in here or anything, but
very small.
But I'm just trying to get an idea of what. I mean. That you've reduced the number of dwelling units overall by four, is that because it's occupied, the commercial component's meant to occupy the space where the four units were?
Well, we had three lots here, and so we lost another lot in the sauce.
Okay, somewhere else in this in the mix. Okay.
But that, to answer your question, this is a 53,000 square feet. We have to have 40% open space. That means you can develop about 40,000 square feet. We're planning... In our stormwater system plans for this being about 80% impervious, which would be about 24,000 square feet, that would be the parking, the sidewalks, the dumpster pad, the roof, the all the accoutrements. So that would be the limitation, both physically and the sizing of the storm drain system, because it's at the upper end of this watershed. So that's sort of the rough numbers of the level of intensity. That 24 is everything, every square inch of impervious.
Right. Okay. So all sidewalks, parking stops, everything. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Bike racks. The whole
thing. And I guess what I'm trying to get to is that as far as Bowling Creek will know about this matter, what you have proposed here tonight is really not very notably different than what we approved back in 2009.
That's correct. Omar's pointed out to you this this is about exact trade-offs. We lost four units, but we have that. What we have added is impervious surface in this small alley here, and then we've upsized all the stormwater controls to accommodate this amount of impervious surface. I don't know if I answered your question, but
yeah, I'm just trying to make sure I've got all the
so we spent the about facts 14 months going through that design process to get here. Out of the last 18, we spent about 14 getting that design approved.
So I'll just point out that I think one of the things that we ought to overall consider about the way that our development review process is structured in Carrboro is whether it's really helpful for an applicant to have, and this is an unusual circumstance here, but it commonly happens with CUPs all the time that applicant will have spent 12 or 18 months working with stormwater engineers to draw up an extremely detailed stormwater management plan that they put before us in order to get their conditional use permit approved. And I have personally pretty much zero qualifications for judging the sufficiency of their stormwater management plan. I mean, some folks come up and say some critical things about it. I don't know. I'm not an engineer. I don't know anything about it. We have a professional town engineer, and the folks at that firm are responsible for providing us with that kind of information in terms of whether the plan is sufficient or not. And I guess, given that sometimes people are going to bring projects that may ultimately be turned down, I guess I would question how useful it really is to have to spend a year and a half on stormwater to bring a detailed stormwater plan to the board that the board is then, potentially just going to say, yeah, we're not even interested in this project, and kind of toss it aside. And whether there are maybe some things like that where most of us are not especially well qualified to judge, and we have professional staff that we rely on for making such judgments, that maybe that component of the approval process can come at a different point so as to reduce the amount of money that developers potentially have to risk. That isn't how we got to this situation, but it's kind of the same thing in the sense that they developed a whole plan, and now here we are 3 years later, and the rules are kind of on the verge of changing underneath their feet. So
I'd like to add one little thing to that. Yeah. I completely agree with you. They had a plan. We said, hey, have you thought of putting some commercial in that? Mm-hmm. They didn't have to jump at that, and they did because we and citizens in the town are always saying if we're going to be truly walkable, if we're going to be truly sustainable, if we're truly going to protect the environment, we have to have some commercial in it. So they spend months and dollars coming back with another plan that includes the commercial. They would not be in this position if they weren't responding to our request for commercial. I'd just like to kind of remind the community of that.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I appreciate you saying that and the work and time and money that you have put into this. And time equals money, right? That's part of what you named. And people named some values here. And I'm glad that you responded. I mean, I wasn't part of that conversation, but glad you all responded to needing commercial development in this so people aren't driving into town for some services that they could get in the development. And I also feel like I've heard people raise questions. I feel like you can pay to do, people, not necessarily you, this is not personal to you all, can pay to do anything. So if folks are cutting down trees, right, to develop a property, then they can potentially pay to be able to cut down a certain amount of trees. If we know that the Jordan rules are going to go into effect, what does it mean? And again, it's not personal to you, but what does it mean for us as policymakers to make a decision that we know that we're, they don't necessarily have to legally comply with, but future developments will have to as soon as June or July. And all the affordable housing is together, and what does it mean that we're saying that because you don't have enough money, that you need to live all together and you need to live next to power lines? And I do feel like you're meeting the part of Vision 2020 that speaks to the diverse housing stock. And I also know that the economy is horrible right now, and so that the model for affordable housing has to change. And so I'm not, this isn't a statement about penalizing you for that, because I do think you're meeting a need that is not currently represented in Carrboro with the 200,000 to 220,000, I think is what those homes will be. And we have a serious problem. People have brought up that folks can't afford to live here. So I just think there are values questions that we need to consider as a board as we move forward that folks have raised tonight and that we're well aware of. Many of you have worked on these issues, and they're just coming to mind in this. I mean, I think there are lots of positive things about this, and we need to be accountable to the values that people raised, and specifically the brand. Like, do we want to have all affordable housing, poor folks living together? Do we want to have them living next to a power line? Do we want the tot lot next to the road? I know there's a fence around the tot lot, but still, is that what we want? So I just think we have some discussions to have in the future.
Sammy. I just have a question for Mike. Mike, it's not currently a condition, the connection between Colfax and the street, but it is in the maps. Is that sufficient to guarantee that happens?
The
maps we have here, it shows the Colfax Drive connection.
Somebody's got to help me out here with what you.
And the plans for the development.
What page is it, Sam?
I'm wondering if it's sufficient to guarantee that this gets built.
Yeah, if we approve it, we're approving the package, including those drawings are.
Are you asking, if I might jump in, are you asking whether the plans themselves bind the developer to build that?
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I understand what he's asking, Mike.
That's the question, Mike. Whether these plans bind the developer.
Yes, it was shown in the plan. What's confusing me is my understanding is there was not a connection. I mean,
there is a connection. It's a connection, but it's like it was described in the previous.
Yes, the non-connection.
Got it. What's
shown in the plan.
Thanks.
Okay.
And then I just wanted to ask the developer a couple of questions. Just, I am the liaison to the Transportation Advisory Board, and I'd like for them to be represented. Lydia asked some of the conditions they were hoping to see. The other one was whether chicanes could be used instead of speed tables to control speed on the roads that were originally slated as speed tables. Is that...
Any problem with chicanes versus speed tables? I think they're...
Okay.
Look a lot
so you're willing to
Zin
have that.
Favor chicanery.
You're willing to have that. You can have that as a condition.
Back there, Harbor Citizen.
Okay, cool. And then the other one was, let's see. If I remember correctly, the stub out to the greenway as currently shown is what you were saying you're going to build to that greenway anyway. And that was something they wanted. And I think that was it. The other question I have is still related to the electromagnetic radiation from those power lines, because I read how at 2 milligauss, it can be detrimental to people's health. And the anecdote of someone who had measured it at 1.8 is problematic to me, because it's close enough, and yet it's just an anecdote, and I would be wanting to hear a more official read of what is actually there, and for the board itself to revisit this and really create a condition such that we can't develop in under power lines, because it could be bad for people's health, and this is one of the reasons why we.
You're saying for future applications?
For future applications, but for this one too, I'd like to.
Because this one, this is already approved.
This is already approved.
Well, and
right.
And I mean, I think if you were going to have a regulation like that, that part of it. I mean, anyway, there's a bunch of like sort of looking at the science or evidence behind it that we would want to do that. I know some of y'all have looked at that issue a lot. I have not, but
right. But if you take into account the fact that people don't like to live next to power lines, there's another way of assessing health, and it's just common sense for some folks, and that's why most folks don't want to live next to power lines. So subscribe to solely science, and I understand that's what most people are comfortable with, but the fact that that most people don't want to live next to such a place is only reason for us to really have science to know for sure whether or not it's the precautionary principle.
I understand that point, and I guess what I believe anyway about the science is that the results are mixed, basically. But I guess my point is that there's sort of a much grander discussion of this issue that needs to happen at some point. That's kind of beyond the context of just this development. I also do think it's worth, just while I have stolen the floor for a moment, I think it's worth recognizing that Omar's proposal is not that any part of this development has something that is designated as affordable housing. I mean, there will be more and less expensive components of this, but it is an entirely private sector initiative in the end, or at least as he's shown it here. So I mean, there are some more, there are some less expensive and probably more expensive lots and locations in this development, but it's not a matter of anything within our affordable housing program being specifically put under power lines. But Dan,
could I just finish the tab points?
Sorry.
I heard the answers to Lydia's questions about the 4 points on the Transportation Advisory Board. If we're going to do the conditional use, I would like for us to really agree on those before we can move forward, whether yay or nay, one way or another, because that is the time when we agree on conditions.
Which points are those?
Just the minimum of 8 feet question, bike rack added to the tot lot, the wayfinding signs to direct people to the greenway.
Hold on. No, I'm not sure if he is. Can we go to the town attorney for just a second and get some advice procedurally on how to address some of these issues?
Well, again, I think at some point in your discussion, you can either take a straw vote or get a consensus of whether or not you've got a majority in favor of issuing the permit, in which case you go back and do the annexation and the rezoning and then issue the permit. If you've got a majority that's disinclined to issue the permit, then I think Mr. Zinn will probably withdraw the annexation request, and that will end the discussion.
Okay. Can I just say real quick? Sammy, I'm in favor of doing those four things, but when we start adding four more things and four more you know what I'm saying? It's easy to sit and ask me, well, would you do these four things? I'm not trying to.
But so far there aren't four more things.
Yeah, I don't know if there aren't going to be any many more.
I don't have any.
Well, there's this nutrient question.
Right. Yeah. There is. I know that when I raised the question, that Omar and Phil, you kind of were, kind of collaborating, and then we went off into another direction, talking about commercial. Do you feel like there's, something that you would take a look at? Because that's important to me.
Well, I'll let Phil come up here as well.
Because we have this, this funny, it's 90 days less, could be less.
Well, the funny thing about it, Randy, I mean, part of it is I'm agreeing to something, but I don't know what it is I'm agreeing to.
I know.
You say, okay, well, you do this. Okay, well, I don't know. What is this? And what is it going to entail? And how much is it going to cost? We've done this whole stormwater management plan, which has cost, still a lot of time and money. So how is that going to change
things? Well, I guess the question I'm trying to answer in my head is, at some later point, Carbro is going to be paying the difference for what nutrients go in that we end up having to mitigate for if they don't match the Jordan Lake rules. So. I want to know that if you're close, as you see what comes up in June, that you're going to do your darndest to meet those standards. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, I think what we can do is, first of all, I'm absolutely convinced we will be daggone close or maybe meet the standard just with what Sungate has already approved and what we've spent the last 14 months, designing. But I think we can agree to... we will be submitting working drawings before you adopt this ordinance. Mm-hmm. So, but as part of the ongoing discussion, we'd be willing to make the these nitrogen and phosphorus reduction calculations and see how close we are and tweak it if to get there or get as close as you know humanly possible and report back to you how close we have come. I mean, I know I haven't done a good job of explaining it, but the techniques that are going to be used after the 1st of July mm-hmm. are going to be the same techniques we're using now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're going to actually meet the standard. And I know that's an opinion, but what I'm committing to do is to make the calculation and be able to show you and work with the staff that we are, in fact, meeting. Yes, if you'll accept that.
Would you ever be willing to meet with Friends of Bowling Green just to get started?
Well, I think we really, you know, really... We need to keep this thing with the engineering staff and the engineering process okay. that you have through this,
right.
through town hall.
Dan Coleman, you have the floor.
Yeah, before we take a break, I'd like to take up Randy's suggestion and move that we reschedule the OWASA item to an upcoming meeting.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
And what about do we need to do number 5 tonight?
The fees
yeah, which is really pertinent. I mean, we don't have to do it tonight, but it's basically, if that's passed, it means people can pay to pollute, which they're not able to do right now,
right.
Okay,
and they're
well,
not trying to
I'm not prepared to
do.
Have a discussion on
right.
five.
So let's not
so,
do that.
So,
is there
right. so
that,
five and six.
Hold on, staff.
There's consultation.
Is that going to be accepted?
We can postpone it a week.
Okay.
That's okay.
That's good.
Okay.
Thank
okay.
you.
That's my
so,
motion.
Dan,
okay.
if that's a motion, I'll second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that items 5 and 6 are deferred to future agendas. The staff will bring both those back. Thanks for coming. Sorry.
Any idea on when?
The OWASA. Well, no. They were here for the OWASA item.
Next week.
Is it? Do we have room on our agenda next
yeah,
week?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, meeting on
it's,
the last next week.
So how appropriate.
Yeah, I think we can make
yeah,
it.
Yeah, me too.
24th.
We're meeting over at Owasso.
It'll be real obvious when you get okay. here and the door's locked.
All right, yeah, 24th apparently, Terry. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of change.
We need to talk.
So far.
Really?
Okay. All right, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Okay. Now, let me ask a different procedural question, if I may. Jump in.
Didn't I just move that we take a break?
No, you didn't.
I thought that's what I seconded.
No.
Okay.
No, he said before we take a break.
Let's see.
That we. Okay. So, how far through agenda items 1 and 1 through 4 does the Board of Aldermen intend to get tonight? Is I guess my question. There's the annexation. There's the rezoning. Then there's the CUP details.
Well, there's no sense doing the annexation.
And
why don't we do the first two?
Well, or why don't we? Well, we can. Why don't we do our straw poll on the CUP after we take the break, so we can all clear our heads and come back, you know? And
okay.
You know,
is
have,
it?
Have
I mean,
a,
what,
have a few improv discussions.
I understand. Understand. I'm trying to figure out whether we're expecting to get through a final vote on the CUP tonight or not.
Okay.
Well, so let's have the discussion be quite focused when we come back. So okay. we're going to be in recess for 7 minutes. All right. Okay. All right. Welcome back. We were going to take a straw poll, I guess, basically, is what the suggestion was.
Yes. And then that will indicate whether it was to keep the annexation petition before you or not.
Okay, so this is straw poll question, I guess, is basically whether we wish to consider the issuing a conditional use permit along these lines.
Yes.
Along these lines, meaning we're going to get down to the nitty gritty in just a moment. But those who are interested in considering a conditional use permit along these lines, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed.
Okay. No, I mean, I've got some questions, but
still a little uncomfortable. All right. So, but the straw poll results were 6-1, which neither passes nor fails because it's a straw poll. therefore, I think probably then the appropriate thing to do is to hear what Mr. Attorney, a motion for the annexation ordinance?
Yes, first question would be the passage of the annexation ordinance, which is in the summary.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for the annexation ordinance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passes unanimously. All right. And then
next issue would be the rezoning, which is the resolution affirming the reasons that it's in the public interest. You know, you always have that sort of backup resolution as to why you're voting for what you're voting for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Move attachment A1.
Second.
That's the resolution. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter of fact, unanimously.
And move the ordinance amending the zoning.
Second.
All right. So this motion grants the rezoning. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter of fact, unanimously. And that book brings us, I guess, to the conditional use permit.
Then you just have the worksheet that you would normally go through.
Okay.
Yep.
So
where we have to agree on conditions. There's still some
conditions. Question from Lydia, I guess.
Yeah, actually, I had. Now I guess we're talking about any additional conditions.
Mm-hmm.
There was a condition that the Appearance Commission had, and I wanted to see if we could add it to the list of conditions. It's in our packet, and it's a condition that the Appearance Commission be allowed to review the elevations of the size limit of the units to be constructed within the pub prior to the issuance of the building permits. I'd like to add that condition.
I'd like to say I strongly disagree with that condition. The Appearance Commission, we're a building company. We have architects. We have designers. Appearance Commission, for them to be able to control my permitting process, to me, feels unfair.
Okay. I'd like some guidance from the board about this. I'm a new liaison to the Appearance Commission. And this is something that they put forward, and so I'd like to hear from the rest of you how
I was just saying the attorney looks like he has something to say. I don't know.
Jackie, only for clarification, because I think I heard two different things. One, I heard the condition that they be allowed to review, which I perceive as being an opportunity to comment on, and I think Mr. Zinn heard them saying a little stronger authoritative than that. So I think what you're talking about is having the Appearance Commission review and make some comments if they
would. No problem with that.
Okay. I didn't think so.
Okay.
Thanks,
all right.
Mike.
As opposed to sort of an approval, disapproval kind of thing. Okay, I follow you now. Does anybody have any further questions on that?
No.
That seems reasonable.
Not on that. I've got other questions. I know that the planning board had a question of whether Claremont South and the initial Claremonts, they're separate developments, and this question of the points for the recreational amenities. And so I had the question of whether the points of the northern development and the south, for one, does the northern development already have surplus points so that this could be tacked on?
What's your recreation point situation?
I know that on the north side, we're almost 100% over our required recreation points. On the north side,
we've got double, almost double.
Almost double. That's just on the north side.
I gotcha. Okay. Does that answer your question?
That answers that question. And then I still have the question of tab recommendations and whether you're willing to accept those conditions, specifically the bike rack added to the tot lot and the wayfinding signs to be put in direct people to the greenway. What was the other one? Oh, the chicanes.
The chicanes. Shall we run down that?
The list.
The list.
Yeah, just go. Yeah. What is it called?
The conditions.
That form you have.
The recommended list.
The worksheet.
The worksheet.
Thank you. Aren't we still talking about conditions? Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, at some point, it's a question of whether we're going to put them in there.
Right. So why don't we agree on what the conditions are, and then we'll know what we're
putting
in.
It's this one.
Okay. I'm sorry.
We agreed to the first 13.
Right. The staff's 13.
I agree with the staff conditions, the first 13 that meet the LUO. I agree with Lydia's four conditions.
Which were
the bike rack, what Sammy just mentioned.
The chicanes,
the sign, head directional sign point towards the greenway.
Bike parking or something.
The sidewalk.
And the sidewalk expansion.
And you agreed with the appearance commission.
Yeah, I don't have. I thought they were going to be holding permits up. So
no, they want to see it.
So. Yeah, that's no problem.
Okay.
No problems with that.
And you agreed with the native or other low water use plantings.
Yes, low water use for native or low water use. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
All right.
I want to just clarify. So. I'm not clear whether or not. What's also agreed upon is the planning board's recommendation that the road stub out shouldn't be extended in Caroline North. Just remind me if that's in or out.
I wasn't going to do that.
Okay. I'm just checking. Planning board number 3. I just want to get a clarification on whether that was in or out.
Well, what is it? I don't understand.
It was not.
It's consistent with the previous plan where we...
The 2009 plan?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's why I wanted to be sure.
Exactly the same as the 2009 plan.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. With respect to various connectivity issues. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So.
So can we go ahead through the worksheet now?
Yes.
Okay. So moved that the application's complete.
Second.
Been moved and seconded that we find the application complete. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Move that the application is in compliance with the land use ordinance.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that it's in compliance with the ordinance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
Move that the application, if granted, shall be subject to conditions 1 through 13 stipulated by the staff plus the stipulation of the canes, the bike rack at the top lot, the wayfaring signs. What's the point on the sidewalk?
8 feet.
8 feet sidewalk. A review of the certain housing elevations by the appearance commission and the use of native or other low water requirement landscaping for residential purposes.
Second.
All right.
And let's make sure, are those conditions clear enough, Mike, for
I think for they're clear enough to get the appropriate, we'll have to wordsmith them a little bit, but I think they're clear enough, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Second. I did.
Move that the application is granted.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
And move the resolution removing the two additional phases, phase 4 and 5, from the Claremont subdivision conditional use permit.
Second.
Which is the next gen item.
Yeah. Right.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All the I mean, I guess technically speaking,
it's not a public hearing.
Do we have to, are we required to have a public hearing on that item?
And we didn't actually close the public hearing.
Well, I don't think, I don't know.
It's effectively closed.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're fine.
That's attachment A.
So we're not required to have a separate public hearing, Mr. Attorney, on that particular item?
It's a minor modification. We don't.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
So all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
I just want to comment that, you know, I feel like this was a decision on my part where I was taking into account a previously approved plan. And so that there wasn't really much opportunity, and being a new member of the board, even to have the discussion. And so, but I recognize many members of the board did have discussions, and that it was a matter of expediency that was closed. Had this been a decision from scratch, I would have, and knowing that the board wasn't already going to pretty much approve this, I would have probably put a lot more questions and probably, especially given that this is so close to the creek and has so many issues. Having said that, I do want us to, as a board, be proactive in the future and really looking at what we have currently zoned as it is close to very endangered places and also in ways that could encourage higher density development where it makes most sense, and that it not always be ad hoc per proposed project. We really do have to put some work towards that. And as all was also mentioned tonight, we need to really put some thought towards the affordable housing aspect of things too. And of course, the electromagnetic radiation thing is a concern that I have. I didn't feel too comfortable about how this went tonight, but I feel like it's in large part because it's a modification of something that was pretty much very similar to what was already approved.
Yeah, kind of piggybacking on Sammy a little bit, this brought up my memory that I do want us to revisit the Connector Road policy. Mm-hmm. I think that neighborhoods, anyway, we can get into it later, but I think we just need to look at it again and fine-tune it, and so that neighbors and neighborhoods have an expectation of what might be coming and when.
I just want to say there were several issues. Sammy identified at least two. Lydia identified the Connector Road. Michelle was talking about values. So there's several things that we really need to tease out of this discussion tonight and come back to, because they're kind of loose threads in the way we go about business.
Yeah, I think the key thing I would add is that the other thing to consider is that, I guess, 5 or 6, 5 years ago or something, when we started in on our northern small area planning process, reviewing that, we made we've essentially said to some property owners, you are going to be caught up in this process, and you need to go through this process, and we'll look at any development applications after that is over. And there were a couple of developers who were right on the cusp of bringing something in, or who were just then bringing something in when we started, including this project specifically. And this board actually voted, I think, even parcel by parcel, about 3 or 4 different possible development applications about whether they would be sort of held up in this planning process or not. And the board voted explicitly not to try and capture this one in that process, because we felt like it was already sort of so far along that it was unreasonable to ask them to wait for that. The same thing, but we did the same thing, but with a different result. I'll point out on some other property that Omar's involved in that we were discussing the other week, and so, you know, I kind of feel like a lot of what I heard tonight was people coming in and trying to kind of retry the case when it comes to this particular development. I think many of the issues they raised will be interesting to think about in the context of the development at 86 or old 86 and Eubanks Road. But I'm not inclined to try and second guess everything here. So
I just want to thank Omar and Phil for not only addressing the nutrient question, but you know, having an eye towards what we're expecting and knowing that you know we're putting our faith in you.
All right, we're taking a long time to vote on whether. Yeah, did we vote on the four, eliminating 4 and 5?
Yes,
we did. Okay, all right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
See y'all later.
Good luck.
Thank you.